They laid anything out on the deck. Ben stood helplessly over him, not knowing what to do. His body had reverted to a simple humanoid shape, and his metal was cracked in 100 places. One side of his head had broken open. Dimming lights came and went in the exposed workings of his mind, like drifting thoughts. Pooji knelt beside him, crying. Halloweeny patted him awkwardly on the shoulder, silent for once in the presence of death. Anything stared up at the sky.
I always knew humans would be the death of me. I should never have come on this mission.
Don't die. Don't leave me.
Not like I have a choice. You go on, Pooji. Find the red man. Kick his ass. And don't take any shit from these humans. Get them out of here. I don't want them here. And someone get this damn light out of my arm.
Bruin Bear reached for something to shade him, and then stopped as he realized. Anything was dead. Pooji picked the metal man up and held him in his arms, rocking back and forth, and the tears he cried were just as real as any human's. Flynn stopped filming. And up in the sky, the super people fought on, uncaring of the lesser beings below. The ship chugged on through the day, and the sounds of war grew louder. They could almost make out now the individual explosions that made up the never-ending thunder. There was smoke in the air, too, gradually darkening the daylight, till it seemed evening had come early. The humans and the toys watched from different sides of the deck. They'd been keeping themselves separate since anything's death. The steamer pressed on, slowing slightly as wreckage began to appear in the dark waters of the river. And then there were bodies of toys floating past the ship, and bits of toys. So many dead, they were beyond counting. Trees burned on both sides of the river, dark smoke billowing up into the false evening sky. Some patches were already burnt out, dead trees in a dead landscape of rutted earth and trenches and bomb craters. Bright splashes of color lit up the sky in vivid moments, the flash of explosives and the tumbling stars of falling flares. The toys grew restless. The sea goat stared straight ahead, eyes wide and nostrils flared, as though deep within him, his shub programming was struggling to resurface. Bruin Bear held the goat's hand with his paw, as hard as he could. Pooji had curled into a ball, hiding his eyes as he sought to hide from old memories of blood and death. Halloweeny set guard at Julian's door and would not move. And then suddenly, the war was all around them. Armies of toys covered both banks, running and shouting and fighting with boundless strength and fury. They were armed with all kinds of weapons, from crudely beaten blades to energy weapons. Grenades arced through the air, sending earth and broken toys flying. Hand-to-hand combat broke out everywhere, toy fighting toy, with no sense of strategy. It was just chaos, a sprawling mess of death and destruction. The humans and the toys on the steamer ducked as rockets roared over their heads, exploding on the opposite banks.
Where the hell did they get all these weapons from?
From Shub. We were supposed to use them against you. And some we made ourselves. Shub gave us that knowledge, too.
Can you tell who's winning? The good toys or the bad toys?
No one's winning here. They're just dying.
And at that moment, as though the warring toys had only just noticed them, the armies on both sides of the river opened fire on the paddle steamer. The waters erupted as bombs and grenades fell short, showering the deck with water. The humans and the toys had to cling to the guardrails to avoid being swept away. Energy beams shot out of the murk, piercing the ship's sides in a dozen places. The deck shuddered underfoot as the Mary Mrs. Trustpot screamed. Fires broke out, flames licking hungrily along the wooden hull. The humans fired their disruptors at both banks, while the toys ran to fight the fires with buckets and hand pumps. Evangeline stuck her head out of Julian's cabin, and Finley yelled for her to get back inside. She was safer there. Evangeline looked around her and didn't argue. Giles and Finley put away their guns and drew their swords. They knew someone would come. Toby kept his head well down, recording an exciting commentary, while Flynn sent his camera shooting back and forth, trying to cover as much as possible. More energy beams blasted ragged flaming holes in the ship's superstructure. So far, they hadn't hit the boilers. The ship hadn't stopped screaming, but her great paddle wheels still turned. Toys plunged into the river and swam over to the ship. There were teddy bears and shape-changing adapters and dolls of all kinds. The sea goat appeared with a barrel of oil and emptied it over the side. It floated on the surface of the water, thick and glossy. The goat ignited it with a thrown torch, and flames sprang up around the ship. Toys caught in the blazing oil screamed as the flames consumed them. But many more made it to the side of the steamer and surged up the hold hull and over the guardrails. Finley and Giles met them with flashing swords, and the goat was there with his club. But they were so few, and there were so many enemies, crazed to kill humans. Toby and Flynn came to add their swords, and Poogie and Bruin Bear left their firefighting and came to help with savage claws and vicious jaws. And even in the midst of the war, the bear still had time to be appalled at how easy it was becoming for him to fight and kill. At Halloween, a little skeleton boy picked up a fallen sword and threw away the last of his innocence to join the battle too. They fought together, human and toy, not knowing who they fought or why, against an army of toys fired by Shub's imperatives, while flames roared around them. The ship was screaming constantly now. The bridge exploded as it took a direct hit, and the lifeless body of the captain was thrown through a window, his blackened form hitting the deck hard, to lie still and smoking and unnoticed. The ship began to drift off course, heading for the left-hand bank. Finley found himself fighting back-to-back with Giles. Their swords had scattered dead toys across the deck, around them and underfoot, but still more pressed forward from every side. The air was full of almost human screams and bestial roaring from the attackers. The Campbell and the Deathstalker were fighting at the peak of their abilities, and nothing could get near them. But they both knew they couldn't hold out indefinitely against such overwhelming odds.
Things look bad.
More than bad.
Finley cut down a slavering wolf in a woodsman's uniform.
They'll need a miracle to get out of this one.
My thoughts entirely. The same miracle I used to save us last time.
It only took a moment for Finley to understand.
No, not again. It would kill him.
There was a sharp crack of thunder behind him and a clap of air rushing in to fill the space where the Deathstalker had been. Finley knew where he'd teleported to. He fought his way through the crush to reach Julian's cabin. He kicked the door down and rushed in. Giles had dragged Julian to his feet and was holding the Esper up with one hand, while he used the other to fend off Evangeline. Finley drew his disruptor and pointed it at Giles.
Not again, Deathstalker. Not again.
Either he calls up a Psystorm or we're all dead. Which is more important, one already dying Esper or our lives and our mission?
They all staggered a moment as another explosion shook the ship. Giles smiled humorlessly.
Make up your mind, Cabell. We're running out of time.
He's my friend. I didn't rescue him from hell just to let you kill him. I'll kill you first, Giles.
The gun was very steady in Finley's hand.
You've got power, Giles. The maze made you different, stronger, powerful. Use that power to save us.
I can't. I could teleport myself out of here, but I couldn't take any of you with me. And without the ship, how could we even reach the forest?
You need power? I'll give you power, Deathstalker.
Julian grabbed his captor by the chin and turned his head around so they were staring into each other's eyes. Power surged up in Julian as he called on all his reserves. He could feel things breaking and tearing inside him, and he didn't care. His mouth stretched in a mirthless grin, and blood seeped between his teeth and dripped off his chin. Julian Sky focused his esp and hammered it right into Giles' head. For a moment, Giles thought he was staring into the sun, brilliant and overpowering. Julian's strength was fueled by his last dying energies, and he used it all to reach out and meld his power with that of Giles, slamming them together so that they mixed and merged. Giles and Julian screamed together, and then Giles teleported and took the whole ship with him. Air rushed in to fill the great gap where the paddle steamer had been. And then there was only the river, burning here and there, with dead toys floating face down in it. The toys forgot the ship and returned to the war. And the slaughter went on, as always. The Merry Mrs. Trustpot reappeared about half a mile farther up the river. Great waves splashed up on either side of her as she settled, drenching half her fires and putting them out. Giles and Finley and Julian came storming out of the cabin and tore into the remaining enemy toys, cutting them down in hardly any time at all. They threw the bodies overboard, and for the first time a silence fell across the deck. Toby lowered his sword and smiled tiredly.
Now that's what I call a miracle. I didn't know you could do that, Deathstalker.
Neither did I. And I don't think I'll be doing it again any time soon.
Giles looked at Julian, standing strong and sure before him.
What the hell happened to you?
Damned if I know. My best guess is that when we joined I was able to draw on your power to heal myself. You're capable of a lot more than you realize, Deathstalker.
You look a lot better. Hell, you look human again. How do you feel?
Perfect, in every detail. I'm back to how I was before the Empire found me. I'm cured, people. Feel free to shout hallelujah.
Keep the noise down. We didn't all make it through.
The sea goat gestured to the other end of the deck, where Halloweeny was kneeling beside the scorched and blackened body of the captain.
Damn. Now who's going to steer the ship?
They pressed on into the afternoon, leaving the war behind them. Downriver lay the forest and the Red Man, and even the dark necessities of battle couldn't push the warring toys any closer than they were. All that lay between the paddle steamer and its destination now was time, and the pondering of mysteries. The humans polished their swords. The toys huddled together, speaking in hushed tones. Halloweeny manned the wheel on the bridge, standing on a box. He watched the river and had nothing to say. The humans had thrown what was left of the captain into the river, the nearest they could get to a burial at sea. They never did find his parrot. The damaged Mary Mrs. Trustpot chugged steadily on, silent again, her great eyes wide open and watchful. They saw the forest long before they reached it. It appeared ahead of them like a huge dark stain on the horizon, into which the river was inevitably carrying them. The humans and the toys gathered together at the bow, eyes fixed on the end of their journey, old differences forgotten in the face of the unknown. The forest was upon them with increasing speed, and soon they could all make out the first great trees of the boundary and the narrow opening through which the river flowed. The paddle steamer slowed, as though offering one last chance to turn back, and then she sounded her whistle defiantly, chugged bravely forward into the narrow gap, and entered the forest. It was a dark and primal place, with trees so huge they had to be hundreds of years old. They were tall and vast and threatening, a reminder of a time when humanity lived by the forest's grace and was just a part of its slow primordial pulse. The heavy branches were thick with foliage, interlocked together high overhead, in a canopy that blocked out most of the sunlight. Heading into the forest, the humans and the toys left the day behind and became a part of the endless twilight. No one had ever been meant to play here. There was no comfort or security to be found in the great forest. The place of the trees was wild and free and untamed, and man entered at his own risk. The tall trees stood close together, wide and wrinkled, their leaves a dark, bitter green. The air was thick with the scent of earth and sap and living things. The paddle steamer moved slowly, surely down the river, branches occasionally trailing on the roof of the bridge. It was like moving through an endless evening, gray and solemn and eerily quiet, a vast living cathedral of ancient wood. And so they passed out of the world of toys and into the great green dream of olden days, sailing down a dark river in search of an enigma. The lost soul called the Red Man, and the army he gathered around him for his own unknown purposes. Finley and Giles had their disruptors in their hands, ready for use at a moment's notice. Julian and Evangeline stood together at the guardrail, feeling somehow small and insignificant in such a place of giants. Flynn was going crazy trying to get it all on film, but for once in his life, Toby felt too intimidated by the dark glory around him to offer any commentary. Pooji, the bear, and the goat stood close together, drawing strength from each other. Alone on the bridge, Halloweeny stared into the gloom ahead, like a bird hypnotized by a snake. The endless quiet had a strength of its own. No one felt like breaking it with idle chatter. There were no sounds of bird or beast or insect, just the steady chugging of the ship's engines. The never-ending hush had an expectant quality, as though at any moment some great voice might begin speaking, to which all living things must listen. So both the humans and the toys were all listening hard when the first piercing notes came tumbling out of the dark toward them. The song came first, a bright, vibrant melody, joyous and free. And then came the singers, tiny glowing winged sprites, flying through the trees like tiny stars come down to earth. There were crowds of them, bustling and animated, breaking over the ship like a wave of light, swooping and soaring all around the paddle steamer, but never ever coming too close. The humans and the toys watched with wide eyes and wider smiles, touched by unexpected joy in a dark place. The sprites were human in shape, but only a foot or so long, with great pastel-colored wings. They shone with a brilliant inner light, dazzling and vivid, luminous beings, like living moonlight. And they sang, singly and together, high delicate tones of rippling arpeggios and endless harmonies, a choir of angels on the wing, a sound so pure and beautiful, it broke the heart to hear it. It was the forest given voice, a place and a mood and a meaning wrapped up in song. Everyone on the ship felt that they were on the brink of answers to every question that ever really mattered. And then suddenly, the sprites were gone, surging away into the forest, their song dying away in the gloom in the distance.
What the hell was that? And did you get it on film, Flynn?
Don't ask me. The camera was running, but I was away with the fairies. Weren't they beautiful?
Marvelous. But what are they doing here? What is this forest doing here on Shannon's world? This was never intended as a place for children. Hell, I'm not sure if I'm ready for it at my age.
Could it be real? Something original to the planet? It looks old, even ancient.
No. This planet was a lifeless rock before Shannon had it terraformed. Everything here is his.
Then why did he build this? What's its purpose?
It was to be his next project.
And they all turned to look at Pooji. The cartoony figure didn't look around. His voice was calm, certain.
Shannon's purpose had always been to reach the soul of humanity, to heal its wounds. Summerland was just the first step. A place for children of all ages to find peace and comfort. The forest was to be the next step. A place men and women could disappear into for as long as they needed, to find their spiritual roots and grow strong and sure again. Once the forest was completed, Shannon walked into it and never came out. He's still in there somewhere if he's still alive. That's why Harker chose this place for his retreat. This is a place of rebirth. The rebirth of the soul of Shannon's world.
Wait a minute. How do you know why Harker chose this place?
Because I'm one of his people.
Pooji turned around at last to face them with his large, knowing eyes.
I'm going to lead you right to him.
They all questioned him for some time, but he just shook his head and said Harker would answer all their questions soon enough. The goat was furious at being deceived and even threatened Pooji with his club, but the bear made him back off. Nothing had really changed in their mission, and if the friendly critter could lead them directly to Harker, so much the better. The goat subsided, muttering, but wouldn't put his club away. Pooji stood alone at the tip of the bough, looking eagerly upriver. The humans talked quietly among themselves. Giles said he'd never trusted the toy anyway. Finley pointed out that one rogue toy was hardly any danger to them, but only Evangeline spotted the real implications of Pooji's revelation, that Harker knew they were coming. They pressed on through the twilight. After a while, they began to hear drums beating up ahead, like the slow heartbeat of a sleeping giant, or perhaps even the heartbeat of the forest itself. There were traces of smoke in the air, sharp and spicy. The feeling of being watched by unseen eyes became increasingly powerful, causing the humans and the toys to huddle together in the ship's bow, weapons at the ready. The humans were thinking less about their mission to get important tactical information from Harker, and more about how they were going to survive a meeting with the dreaded Red Man and his army, from whose territory no traveler had ever returned before. The drums grew louder and more threatening. Pooji spoke almost dreamily from where he stood alone.
He's a great man. Not easy to understand sometimes, but still a man of great wisdom. We belong to him heart and soul. We would die for the Red Man. He will lead us all out of the darkness, put an end to the war, change the face of this world beyond recognition.
Whether everyone else wants it or not.
How's he going to make these changes? By unleashing his army on everyone else? By forcing them to follow his way rather than the way they've chosen for themselves?
You don't understand. He knows a truth that changes all of us who hear it. He saved me. He saved us all. He'll save the world, too.
Whether it wants to be saved or not, I've met his kind before.
No, you've never met anyone like the Red Man.
Pooji wouldn't be drawn any farther. Finally, they came to Harker's camp. His people had cleared an open space among the tall trees, and in it built a great wooden fortress with high walls, slender towers, and suspended walkways. Toys in the thousands watched from all around as the paddle steamer slowed to a halt in the great dark lagoon that was the end of the river. The sound of the drums was deafening now, hammering on the air. Smoke rose from 100 fires, burning scarlet and gold in the darkness between the trees. There were blazing torches on every side, the dancing flames casting uneasy shadows. There were toys of every kind, standing close together in and out of the trees, holding all kinds of weapons, silently watching the newcomers with unwavering eyes. Held back by the Red Man's will, but still wary and watchful, and openly menacing. Without warning, the drums fell silent. The army of toys didn't react at all. The sudden quiet was broken only by the crackling of hundreds of fires and torches, and the slow chugging of the paddle steamer's engines. Finley and Giles looked slowly around them, careful to make no sudden move with their guns that might be misinterpreted. The bear and the goat stood very close together, holding hands, lost souls in the underworld. The light from the ship's lanterns made little impression on the surrounding gloom, and the crimson glare of the massed fires and torches only served to deepen the darkness between the trees, like burning coals in the night.
Welcome to hell.
This isn't hell, this is home. Pull into the left-hand bank and lower the gangway. We mustn't keep him waiting.
Giles looked up at Halloweeny on the bridge.
Sound the whistle. Let Harker know we're here. I don't want him thinking we're intimidated.
We are intimidated.
Maybe. But Harker doesn't need to know that. Sound the whistle.
The whistle sounded again and again as the little skeleton boy hauled jerkily on the rope. It was loud and strident, pushing back the quiet, its overlapping echo seeming to fill the forest. The watching toys didn't stir in the least, but everyone on board the ship felt a little better.
Right. Let's go see the red man. And remember, no shooting till we see the whites of their teeth.
If we have to start shooting, we're dead. Let's all keep very calm, people. We're never going home. We're going to die here in hell.
Then die well, if that's all that's left to us.
They made their way cautiously down the gangplank and onto the shore, looking around all the time for any sign of aggression. But the watching thousands of toys were still and silent. Pooji led the way, bouncing happily along without an obvious care in the world. Giles strode along behind him, his chin held high, as though he owned the place. Finley kept Evangeline close at his side, his hand never far from his holstered gun. Julian stared straight ahead, his hands stuffed into his pockets so no one would see them shaking. Toby and Flynn stuck together, taking it all in, the camera bobbing along just above their heads. Bruin Bear and the Sea Goat brought up the rear. Halloweeny walked between them, holding their hands in his bony fingers. The Merry Mrs. Trustpot watched them go with her wide, unblinking eyes, but said nothing. The crowd of toys opened up to provide a way for the newcomers, a narrow gauntlet bristling with weapons, which led into the open courtyard of the great wooden fortress. Finley's breathing began to come fast and hurried, but he kept his face calm and unmoved. He had a strong feeling this would be a bad place to appear weak. He sneaked a glance at Giles, whose expression suggested he'd seen worse before and hadn't been impressed then. And maybe he had. Finley had to smile. Trust a Deathstalker to see him at home in hell. He had already decided that if worst came to worst, he was going to do his very best to kill Harker first, then see how many toys he could kill before they dragged him down. He hoped he'd have time to kill Evangeline. He'd brought her into hell. The least he could do was give her a quick death. Inside the courtyard, brightly lit by hundreds of flaring torches, on a throne carved from the stump of a great tree, sat Vincent Harker, the red man. The man in red. The man in the Santa Claus suit.